What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Happy All-Star Weekend, everybody. By the time you hear this, I will be in Cleveland for all the festivities, but we are not done yet with the aftermath of a wild, wild trade deadline. And aside from all the fireworks, Harden and Simmons and all that, I kept thinking about one team in particular, the Trailblazers, and the teardown, the disillusion of the Trailblazers as we knew them. CJ McCollum, gone. Covington and Powell, gone. Lillard, injured. His future, uncertain. Not an easy time to be a Blazers fan, as my guest today will tell you. He is Kelly Alcoin. You might know him as Dollar Bill from Billions, or as Pastor Tim from The Americans, an incredible, phenomenal series and a show you should go binge if you never have. Kelly's a lifelong Blazers fan. He's hurting a bit about his team right now. So we had a little therapeutic conversation about his team. And of course, we also talked quite a bit about season 6 of Billions, what's on the horizon for Dollar Bill, and some really interesting insights and anecdotes about what it was like to do season 5, which was broken up into two parts because of the pandemic. A lot of interesting stuff there. So if you're a Billions fan, I think you'll love the pod. If you're a Blazers fan, you might, it's a good listen, maybe a therapeutic listen, maybe a little painful listen, but I think you'll enjoy the conversation too. And if you're a Billions fan who's also a Blazers fan, all the better. Before we get to all that, a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the YouTube version. You can actually watch Kelly Alcoin and I have this conversation. Go to YouTube, search Sports Illustrated Podcasts. You'll find it there. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Kelly Alcoin is coming up, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, pleased to be joined from several blocks away via Zoom, Kelly Alcoin. Kelly, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. I know we were just joking that we could meet. We'd each walk about a block and a half, and we'd be able to do this in person.
We could just like both hold microphones, like awkward dorks walking up and down the streets of Park Slope while we do the podcast, and then people can just like chime in as we go. Right?
Perfect. Yeah. No, it's perfect. Look, we got it. This is unscrewable. You got it. Let's do it. That'll be round two.
It'd be fun. Be unpredictable, audience participation. It's taking podcast to a whole other level.
Very bespoke Brooklyn.
Yes, exactly. Great to see you. It's been a while in person or video or anything else. Love the Blazers jacket for the occasion.
Thank you. Phenomenal. Thank you. Got to represent. I almost wore my Sonics shirt underneath it, and I was just like, no, it's going to blow too many minds.
That's tough. Well, I mean, so does that work? Can you represent the entire Pacific Northwest? Is it okay now because the Sonics have been gone so long that Blazer fans would not be put off by it?
I think so. My take is always because I rock the. It's a great old. I should have brought it. It's a great old vintage Sixers. Sonics. I mean, with the dome, the city, and all that used to be on the uniform. And I rock it because of the rivalry. I mean, I hated those guys, but I loved to hate those guys. And I think that helps basketball, just more rivalries. And we don't have enough on the West Coast, and certainly not the Pacific Northwest. So I would be representing a way of life and a rivalry as opposed to two teams.
Yeah, and actually something that's lost, right? It's not that you're rooting for the Sonics. It's like the presence of the Sonics made the Blazers that much more important because of that regional rivalry, right?
Made it more compelling. It made them a better team, actually, too. There were all those, Jerome Kersey or Buck Williams going up against X-Man, any of that. Or Sean Kemp. Both teams were better because of that rivalry. I used to go, when I was living in Portland, I used to go downtown to this big movie theater on Broadway that would simulcast the games when they were on national TV. So if you couldn't get into to Memorial Coliseum, then you could go and you could watch in this packed movie theater with the balcony and everything, like one of those old school movie palaces with people throwing popcorn at the screen and all this. And you really felt like you were there. But I used to watch Jerome and McDaniel just like bash each other. It was awesome. It wouldn't be, I never rooted for the team except when they played the Bulls in the championship, but I never rooted for the team, but I wanted that team there. And I wanted that fan base to have a team. They should. Seattle was a great fucking basketball town.
Yeah. It's a shame. And still is. And yes, we need the Sonics back. Like yeah. I grew up in the Bay Area, I think, you know, and so we had for most of my childhood, A's and Giants, Niners and Raiders, then the Raiders left. Then eventually the Raiders came back. I was out of San Jose by the time, out of the Bay Area by the time the Raiders came back. And that was part of the fun, right? But I sometimes tell this story because, all right, you talk about wearing a Blazers jacket over a Sonics jersey potentially. In the Bay, I don't know if this still exists, but in the Bay Area, or at least in San Jose, when I was a kid, a long, long time ago, this was in high school that I remember this. There was a baseball cap that was half A's, half Giants, split down the middle, which looks hideous for so many reasons, not least of which is that black and orange for the Giants and gold and garnet or whatever for the A's. Like, it's just I'm no fashion expert, but that just, it kind of clashed. It was not great.
Don't sell yourself short. You're a maven. But but yeah, I mean, someone in Oregon came up with the platypus T-shirt for the Ducks and the Beavers. So that was like, if you love both teams, and I do. I mean, I didn't go to either of the schools. My one of my friend's kids goes to the University of Oregon now. My mom and my cousin went to Oregon State, but Oregon State hasn't been as good as University of Oregon for a long time now. So I grew to like the Ducks, and my cousin was the one who, after being pissed at me for years, got me a platypus T-shirt. And he's like, at least do this for me. It's like,
fair enough.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm watching the new season of Billions. That's automatic. And I'm not sure which I'm more concerned about right now for you. I'm not sure if I'm more concerned about Kelly Alcoin, Blazers fan, watching his team dissolve before his eyes. And with Damian Lillard's career hanging in the balance, you're covering your face. For those people who are not watching this on YouTube, Kelly is covering his face and anguishing. I apologize. I'm not sure if I'm more worried about Kelly Alcoin, Blazers fan, or Dollar Bill suddenly independent of Axe Capital, going on financial joyrides with Mafia, making what seemed like, I guess, a really bad investment of money that they could not produce, or that now you had to be bailed out by Michael Prince. I'm not sure I completely followed. This stuff often goes way over my head. So who should I be more concerned about, Kelly or Dollar Bill? Because it feels like Dollar Bill is in a really risky place right now.
I just, while you were asking the question, I flip-flopped four times. So I would say my first answer might be, well, the argument for Dollar Bill is that he's teamed up with Mafia, and our fucking scam would have worked if Mafia hadn't spilt. So he tipped off Ben Kim. And that's the only
reason. He has that habit.
He has that habit. Exactly. So we might have to get back in the ring again or something if he keeps this up. But you know, it's a fun wrinkle to be doing something different. We'll see. We just today or yesterday. I think it was today. It was announced that Billions will be picked up for a seventh season. And I've been told there's some interesting stuff for season seven. So it'll just be interesting to see how it plays out. For Kelly as the actor, I'm fine. For Dollar Bill, it's rocky terrain right now. Put it that way.
To say the least.
So the argument for Kelly, basketball fan, is obvious. It's been freaking emotional, and you read, I think we talked about it, actually we texted about it, CJ's goodbye in the Players Tribune was beautiful, and it made me teary. Really, I read it a second time to Carolyn, my wife, and I got a little choked up again, and she wasn't laughing because she knows how much I like CJ and how much I love CJ and love the team, and I loved the idea of that backcourt making it all the way. I loved the idea of it, and the fact that they are such close friends makes that idea even more beautiful. It just was never going to happen. You know, we got to the Western Conference Finals with that pairing. The match around them was better to pick up deficiencies that they might have had, the pairing might have had. But it just, that was probably the peak, you know, the fact that we got there, but then we got swept. So I've long been I've understood the argument and the idea always, as everyone knows, was that CJ's got to be the one to be traded while his value's high, try to package him with something else and get a better fit. Maybe not a better player necessarily, but a better fit with Dame. But I've always resisted because I love the guy. And since we started a sort of, he's a Billions fan and we have a friend, we're not friends, but a friendly, hey, how you doing kind of relationship. That made the kid in me even more determined to keep him here on my team that I've loved since I was a kid, that one of the best players on the team is actually, you know, kind of a friend. It was hard as a fan to get out of the way. Rational mind knew it should have happened a long time ago. We've talked about this, but I would never have said it out loud. And I have a hard time saying it out loud now even, you know?
Yeah. So when those debates were raging, either amongst, you know, NBA punditry or just among the fan base, you were kind of resisting. You were still kind of like, no. They'll find a way. They'll figure this out. They'll get that third star somehow. They'll balance the front court out or whatever. They'll find somebody to defend all the guards that CJ and Dame aren't guarding. Something. You believe they could find a way. There was an alternative path.
I hoped. Yeah. Yes, I did believe. And it may be that I made myself believe. But I did believe it. And I was like, what if we get Draymond Green, the type of character, type of guy, a havoc wreaker. I did. And I was often interviewed by there's an interesting confluence of fandom in the Billions and NBA worlds. There's a lot of crossover, which is awesome for me as a basketball fan. That's my sport, NBA. It's awesome for me because these are the guys I watch the most. So the long neglected anonymous actor, I finally get some people knowing who I am, and they're these people I idolize. So that's great. So when I'm interviewed on a show that's based in sports or based in, like, Rich Eisen interviewed me when right before we met the Warriors in the championship, and he even asked me, it's like, do you think Dame and CJ could do it? And that's a question I got more than often, and I was always absolutely would say 100% yes, absolutely, even though part of me was like, I don't know, I hope. But it's weird too, not that anyone's paying attention to what I say, but you also don't want to say anything critical about some of these people. Because first of all, I'm not an expert. I am just a fan. And you know, you become friendly with someone, and you don't want then to have it public. It sounds so silly when I'm saying it out loud, but you don't want it to be out there that you've said, yeah, maybe we should trade. It's a strange sort of, it's a weird, new aspect of my fandom that that people are asking me to put my opinions in out in public, and that makes me think, you know, it's different, it's interesting.
Yeah, well, no, it's during the course of Billions, and of course The Americans, one of my favorite all time series. I think your profile was raised in somewhere in that time span. So you've got both things going on, right? It probably increased your connections to the Blazers because your profile meant that, like, oh, okay, we've got this. There's a celebrity fan who we want to embrace, and you've gotten tickets, whether it's here in New York or whether in Portland, and you have relationships with people around that franchise now, broadcast folks, players, whatever. And at the same time, yes, it has increased people like me saying, hey, Kelly, come talk about the Blazers on my podcast.
Which is awesome. And I love talking about the Blazers, and I do have a lot to say. Acknowledging that I'm not an expert, I have passionate opinions, and half of them are deeply wrong, but that's okay.
Same with all of us in the business, by the way. Just ask anybody on Twitter. All wrong all the time.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Yes, and I apologize for what I said about you on Twitter the other day. It was a heat of the moment thing. Yeah, and I got to do before pre-pandemic for 3 years in a row. I was doing I would go out to Portland and do film these promos to lead off the games for playoff games. Versions of like, yeah, why not us when we were taking on we were the number 8 seed and you're taking on the number 1 seed, the Lakers. It was like, why not us? And I got to be on the floor, you know, on the court. I took pictures of me center court. We were filming. I got to shoot from where Dame hit the .9 shot.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it actually clanked on the rim. We had to get out. We only had time for one more. And we were going to end the promo with me hitting it if I hit it. And it was that close. But yeah, so you don't necessarily want to, if you have criticisms, you don't necessarily want to air those criticisms of these people who are treating you really well. And of course it's exciting to have, access to the thing I've loved most my entire, through my boyhood to now, my internal boyhood still, And I guess I'm lucky that I'm not paid to give my opinions there. So I don't have to be critical. So it's, that's very fortunate.
Have you watched any Pelicans games with CJ yet?
I have not. I have them on Fubo. I always say it wrong. Fubo or Fubo or whatever that is. I have a couple of the games and I want to. And I'm pulling for him. I think it could be a great fit. I want him to do well. I want nothing but the best for him. And it's a, you know, it's a young team. If Zion gets healthy, they could be a killer team. I have seen some of our games, and I'm torn. I've never said this out loud. I've never even let myself feel it, but I was like, come on, you're fucking up the tank. But it's so fun to watch these guys. And I've seen Josh Hart when he's killing us, but I've not paid this much attention to him. And he's really, really killing it. Anthony Simons is really, has come into his own this year in a huge way. And it's great to see Nurk's resurgence too. He's really connected and engaged and motivated. And he's like become all of a sudden, he's become like the veteran. You know, the sort of all these young, with all these young guys, and you got Hart's not that young, but he comes in and he's new. And so Nurk is the one kind of doing the Dame role. I've seen him call people over and, you know, his huddle, it's like settle people down and everything. And I think that's great to see him mature into that. So it's exciting. I want a top 5 pick. So I'm really torn watching these guys, and they're having so much fun. You know, Watford and Winslow and Ben McLemore is playing great. I mean, it's just really fun watching them right now. But that's short term. So I'm torn. I'm torn with what I want. But
well, understandably, but it's really fun. The Blazers have had one of the longer current playoff runs, which is going to come to an end in a couple months here. And so now you are in that tortured position that every NBA fan base at some point, I think, has been in, where it's the youth are interesting. They're fun to root for. I'm enjoying this new kind of, roster and, guys finding their footing in the NBA. You know, an Anthony Simons breakout is always a fun thing for a fan base. Yeah. But yes, then there's but if they win too much, they screw up their draft. We haven't had a chance. If you're the Blazers, you haven't had a chance for a very long time to pick that high. And, you know, Lillard was what, 6th overall pick, and it launches an entire era, defines an era. And so it doesn't, you don't have to be the worst in the league. You just have to, you know, nail it. And you only want to be there once.
Yep.
So it's,
yep. It's and the last time we got a pick like that, I'm not sure if you remember which one that was, where you had the number 1 pick. And we picked Mr. Greg Oden over Mr. This obscure role player named Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
So But and I remember. Oh God, I remember. I wanted. I actually thought that. I mean, most pundits. I did a screen capture on the ESPN web page. It had pictures of each pundit, each major pundit, and who they advocated should be the number one pick next to it. Say there were 20 people, 25. Only two said Durant. So anyone now. Any of those guys now who says, you know, like, that was such a stupid move. What the fuck were they thinking in that accent? Because they all have that accent. I got to find that fucking screen capture and email it to him. I said all the time, I wish we had the second pick. Because no matter what, we get a great prospect and we'll never be accused of fucking it up. Although we had the second pick in the Jordan Olajuwon draft, and we picked Mr. Samuel Bowie.
Yeah, there have been a few of these.
Yeah, we could. But anyway,
I'm glad you brought it up so I didn't have to. How about that? I did. I met Greg Oden. I think for the first time, and chatted with him. The last time there was an All-Star game, where I'm about to go to All-Star. By the time this podcast posts, I will be in Cleveland. But of course, last year was not really one for the media. The last time I was at All-Star was in Chicago 2 years ago before lockdown. And I think that was where, I got Greg Oden. The Retired Players Association had set up a room for some of the legends of the game, as they call them. Anybody who's a retired player is a legend, even the guys who were like got a 10-day contract. And so... Greg Oden was there. It was his first time back in among the NBA family, essentially.
Wow.
Since everything that he's gone through. Wow. He was phenomenal. I loved talking to Oden. He's really gotten his life and career and everything together. He's incredibly great. Thoughtful and reflective. He was wonderful.
I always liked him. I thought it was interesting when the stories came out, gradually seeped out things he would say about his rehab. And how he felt like he was basically left alone, or it seemed like he was basically left alone, and that he was drinking too much and out of shape. And then there was even a story I remember about Coach McMillan seeing him really bulked up. Like he couldn't do any aerobics, but he was building more muscle, and he got nervous that he was getting too big that way. Like it was interesting to see how. To hear about, or at least to hear suggestions that the rehab wasn't necessarily handled particularly well, and a lot of that, of course, fallout was emotional for him, from what I understand. So, did you write a piece about him, or was that a podcast?
It was a podcast. That was when I was still at Bleacher Report, so that was the full 48. Right. I don't know if that's still up or not. A lot of those episodes have kind of disappeared off of the platforms out there, because I don't think not everything is up forever, apparently.
Okay.
The internet.
The things you don't want up will be.
Yes.
I have to see if I could find that.
That one is, as you know, was more recent, relatively speaking. So that episode might still, if not, I'll find it. I have other places I can locate these lost.
He was always funny too. I remember some of his early interviews when he was feeling good. It was light and buoyant, and he was a funny, goofy, like he called himself a nerd. I bet he was a fun interview. I'm glad he's doing well.
Yeah, no, it was very enjoyable. Hey, good to see him just doing well. The Indianapolis Star, by the way, last quick note on that. The Indianapolis Star, in that same time frame, early in, I guess, 2020, had done a big feature on him about everything he'd been through and getting back on his feet. So I recommend that too. So we got to talk about Dame.
Yeah.
We got to talk about Dame. So
I will fight you.
Mannix and I have had this debate on this podcast about whether the Blazers should trade Dame. And this was before they started the teardown and before they traded CJ and before this season had gone so far off the rails. It was more about Mannix took the position. See, you'll like this, Kelly. Like, I'm in your corner on this one. Mannix was of the just heartless, non-sentimental. You just have to do what's best for the franchise. Send Dame out. Get a massive... payoff in picks and players and whatever, set yourself up for the future, rip the Band-Aid off. It's time. You're never going anywhere with him. And I have been of the position that there's more value to a Damian Lillard, to that franchise, than just whether or not you can build a contender around him, which obviously is still the goal. But there is a commitment to the fans. There is the need to sell tickets and the whole business side that's saying, whoa, hey, who are we advertising now if this guy's gone? There's this the fact that if Damian Lillard himself continually tells us this is where I want to be, and you're going to trade him without a trade request, and you're doing it now not because he felt he was better off somewhere else, but because you decided the franchise is better off without it. Like, that's difficult emotionally, business wise. There's a lot wrapped up in it. I'm fairly certain I know where you're where you would be on this, Kelly, especially given our previous discussion about you not wanting to advocate for trades of players that you've gotten to know.
Yeah.
But where are you on the Dame Lillard quandary?
And this one, I don't even have to hold. I don't even have to pretend anything at all. You can't. I mean, if he wants a trade, I would be heartbroken, but I would say give it to him. Accommodate him. You have to accommodate him in whatever manner he wants to be accommodated. But what he's given to this franchise, it's the only Pacific Northwest franchise. It's a small market. By the way, bring the Sonics back. It's a small market. He's been so loyal. He has brought legitimacy to the team. He's been the ultimate teammate. He's been a captain. He makes people better. And you just can't, you can't do it. he's played through, apparently, this abdomen, this core issue has been something for a few years now. You can't trade him when he's hurt too. You can't trade him after a season like this, forgetting all the other seasons. You know, it was just last year that he was playing out of his mind, scoring 50, and we just didn't have the team around him to take advantage of that. I mean, he was hurt this season. This is another little sidebar that's connected, but not exactly what you're talking about. But there's a lot of talk about Dame being over the hill, or a lot of little like chatter, a little off on the side, but a lot of chatter because of the way he was playing this season, not being up to what we were used to. And fuck you, he's hurt. His core, like literally he ripped his stomach. It hurts. You can't do anything when you do that. When I was doing the boxing episode, I'm not trying to equate myself with an elite athlete like Dame, but I broke my rib. Mafi hit me too high and missed the padding, and he drove through instead of what we had choreographed. And I was, you know, up like this, so it was all exposed. And it hurt like a motherfucker. I mean, the adrenaline got me through that day, but then for the rest of that week, I could barely move. And I know it's not a broken rib, but it's anything in your core is going to fuck with you. That's my medical expertise talking.
Well, no,
anything in your core is going to fuck with you.
Yes. By the way, no small thing. So my early in my career covering Shaq, an abdominal strain, abdominal tear of some kind, like nearly derailed his career. He talks about how Alex McKechnie, who's now performance director, or I can't remember Alex's exact title, but Toronto, it's a big fancy title. But Alex McKechnie was with the Lakers at the time, they brought him in specifically for Shaq and then ended up hiring him. But Shaq, when he got his MVP that year, 99-2000, credited Alex for saving his career. So the abdominal, especially on a guy like Shaq's size, but even on Dame Lillard, I think that's a very serious thing. That is not something you mess with.
It's very serious. Yeah. And that's an interesting story. I hadn't actually heard that. So anyway, a lot of this talk is that I'm seeing, and even Blazer's Edge. I don't know if you're familiar with Blazer's Edge.
Yeah,
but it's the blog on whatever. I can't remember the sponsor of the platform, but
SB Nation, I believe. Right.
Thank you. Yeah. SB Nation. All of a sudden people are talking about how, you know, we got to trade Dame, and it's like, you wouldn't have even entertained that thought except for the fact that after him playing hurt, even when the season, anyway, whatever. So that's my little sidebar. I'm pissed that some of the motivation is because people are thinking, oh, he's about to fall off a cliff production wise. And maybe that's true. I'm knocking on wood, but if the injury doesn't heal and if it gets worse, maybe that is true. But if he can heal, we're only half a season removed from a brilliant Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
At top of his game, when people were talking about, I don't know how he keeps adding to his game. I don't know how he does it every year. And now one injury plague year and people are sort of off of it. It pisses me off. But I agree with you 100%. I think you knew that I would. The loyalty has been there and the production has been there and the star power has been there. First of all, no franchise should trade that person. But a team like Portland can't really afford to. Yes, you want to do what's best for the franchise, but like you said, trying to build a contender, absolutely. But winning a championship versus having someone like Dame and treating him well is equally, I think, equally as good for the franchise.
Okay, all that said, here it comes. If, let's say he requests it. It's a complete hypothetical. We've made it very clear. You are on the record, Kelly. You do not want Damian Lillard traded under any circumstances if it could possibly be helped. But let's say it was at his request. Are there teams you would least or most like to see him on?
Lakers. Least. Lakers.
That was quick.
Yeah. No, 100% the Lakers. We Portland fans very much feel like we have a rivalry with the Lakers. The Lakers are like, I'm sorry, what? But there have been times
Portland
in our
where?
Past.
Portland, Maine?
Portland,
they have a team?
Portland, Maine. What? That's weird. They don't have a team. This is weird. there are reasons why it is so. It's really fun to hate the Lakers because they do seem to – there are certain franchises that do seem to get all the luck. People want to go to L.A. really badly. So that's hard for a small market, semi-rainy market. As a team. But also, you know, during the Drexler years and during the Rashid years, like that was a legit rivalry. And we'd get punched in the nose, we'd punch them back, and they were, no one was afraid of anyone, but they certainly got pumped up for games with us. And when we were really bad, there were a couple of years where we would beat them. We would shock them, and that was always fun. I remember when my Washington football team was going by its previous name still was playing the Dallas Cowboys. That was a big rivalry back in the day. And Dallas, I think Herschel Walker was still playing, maybe near the end of his time there. They won two games that year, and one of them was beating us. And that was, you know, that was what we did to the Lakers a couple times. Anyway, the Lakers. Other than that, I would rather see him if he had to leave. I would rather see him not in the Western Conference. I'd be really pissed if he went to the Warriors. Although I can't see how they would do that. How the Warriors would fit him in. You know, maybe out of the country. Maybe Toronto. If he, as long as Dame wants to be there, something like that. But an East Coast team. Oh, you know what? The Nets. The Nets or the Knicks. I would because the Nets are kind of my adopted East Coast team, and if I could see them down the street from me, you know, I live like a 12-minute walk from Barclays Center, so that's what I'm choosing. My favorite idea would be the Nets. My least favorite would be the Lakers.
It's funny because we had talked about earlier this season the idea of, you know, in all the fake CJ McCollum trades we were all concocting. McCollum to the Sixers for Ben Simmons. There was the whole Dame Lillard Ben Simmons thing for a while. He could actually get that now if he were traded to Brooklyn. Dame,
that's true.
Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons would look really good.
Yeah.
So you're torn now. You're torn now.
No, not even torn. Not in the least. Not in the least. It would still kill me. It would kill me. But
it'd be fun to watch.
I also, I've gotten to know the GM of the Nets too, Sean Marks. He's a great guy. I would be happy. I am happy for him whenever the team does well. I'm not a huge James Harden fan. So I was never really sold on that trio. So this is, he's obviously a great basketball player. I just didn't know about the fit.
Yeah, no, same. I like, in an ideal world in which Kyrie Irving's actually playing 100% of games instead of just some. I like Kyrie, Kevin Durant, and Simmons as a trio better. Just in terms of fit and Simmons' defense, his playmaking, everything else. I thought there was that abundance of riches thing with all the scoring and the three of them, and it's spectacular, and it was, you know, potentially historically great if they had been able to play more than a handful of games. But I was not entirely sold on it. I wasn't sure that Harden was the guy they got because they could, not because they set out with some grand plan. Like, okay, we've got Kyrie and KD. Who's the great third player we could? You wouldn't necessarily go get another 30 point a game guy with, you know, high usage rate. You'd find you'd probably try to find a Ben Simmons, which they got now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you know, and I also, Jesus, I think that. I have no idea how it's going to work in Philly. And because I think I've always been a little down on Harden more so than I actually should. I think he's obviously a brilliant player, but there's something in me that thinks he's much, much less great than he probably is. And that most people think he is. So to me, and I know how, again, not an expert, but to me, not only getting Ben Simmons, but getting Seth Curry, like, that's an underrated dude. Yes. I loved him on the Blazers, and I wish we could have kept him. He's an assassin, and you think they could have created a facsimile of what the Warriors created. You know, in KD, he would be very much like the player KD in Golden State. You may have heard of. and you got a Ben Simmons, Draymond Green, and you've got some Splash Brothers. Now they don't have the defensive chops of like Clay, but so it's not perfect. But anyway, it's an interesting team.
Yeah, and Steve Nash spent a little time on Steve Kerr's staff or as a coach over there. So there's a whole little.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's
maybe
right.
A little Warriors West thing or Warriors East thing going on.
But why the Blazers can they've never been able to pull off one of these trades ever, except back in when Scottie Pippen and Steve Smith went over with Trader Bob when they came over. But one of those might not have even been a trade. That might have been free agency.
Pippen was a trade with the with the Rockets.
Yeah,
they got the Rockets. Steve Smith was they got out of Atlanta in I think J.R. Ryder went to Atlanta in that deal.
There were trades then. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. And actually, interestingly, Pippen probably was more available in Houston because Drexler had recently retired, right? Like, it wasn't working. The Barkley, Pippen, Drexler.
No, that was post Drexler. So it was.
Right.
Yeah. Barkley, Pippen, Olajuwon, briefly.
I did not remember that. So then Drexler would have been playing there for. So Drexler had retired a lot earlier than that.
Yeah, Drexler was gone.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
okay.
by that point. Rasheed Wallace, was that also a trade when they got Rasheed initially?
I think
from Washington.
We got him from Washington, and I can't remember who we gave up for him, but that was
So they made some good deals back in the day. It's a different NBA now.
Over 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's a little while ago.
Anyway, it's not only can we not seem to land a big free agent, we're not pulling off the huge trades. Although, Jesus Christ, if Josh Hart keeps playing like he's playing, then that'll certainly end up having the same impact as one.
Well, the tough thing about those trades, Kelly, for I think Blazers fans is that, you know, you can see the outline of what they're attempting, right? They say, you know, they shed a lot of payroll. They gave themselves all kinds of flexibility, some extra draft capital. But, you know, I think everybody at a glance, certainly people in my business, feel like they didn't get enough. They didn't get enough for these players. And so it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Like I'm not sure what's next for this team. I don't know where they're going from here.
Yeah.
And the cap room in a small market, as we know in today's NBA, doesn't usually get you the star. They're not coming to the small markets, but cap room can be used in other ways. They have a trade exception too. Maybe there is some deal we cannot foresee right now in mid-February.
Yeah. And I was convinced that we were going to, I keep telling people I'm not an expert, but then I start thinking this is exactly what's going to happen. I know, because I'm an expert. I really thought, okay, we're gonna tank. We're going to get a top five in my brain, top three pick. And we're going to package CJ and the top three, top five pick for Ben Simmons, maybe, or for someone like that. That's how I saw it shaking out. So I was surprised and agreed. I assumed CJ would have a lot more, I don't know what the word is, but I just assumed that we would get a lot more for someone like CJ, that there would be a lot more interest. But maybe there wasn't right now. Maybe that just wasn't. Maybe there weren't enough teams that were looking for what he brings, which, you know, he's a brilliant scorer. So part of me is like, well, who wouldn't want that? But, you know, maybe there weren't that many deals out there. It would be interesting to be in the room if there's a war room. I imagine there's always a war room for these trades. It'd be interesting to hear them talking about what they were looking for, to see what other offers might have come in for CJ and how they value players and how they just what you're saying. Like, are they playing 3D chess? You know, I have to hope they are, certainly. But
yeah, every single one of these deals, I would love to be on the fly on the wall for you know, something like that Harden Simmons swap at that level, as intense as that was. And some pieces of that have been leaked. Some aspects of that conversation have been leaked out there. But I mean, the actual back and forth, because if you think about it, like Simmons for Harden straight up, you could make the case for the Nets got younger. Ben Simmons is under contract for the next few years. All of this, right? You could make a case for straight up with nobody sending anything extra in either direction. But of course, you're going to partially for cap reasons, but partially because it's a leverage play, right?
Yeah.
How long did it take going back and forth to extract Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, the two picks? Does Daryl Morey go into that actually saying, no, we have the leverage because James Harden's going to walk. You know he's going to walk. Right. You're going to lose him for nothing. And then Sean Marks is coming back with, yeah, but you've got Ben Simmons taking up space and doing nothing for you, and you need to solve this. You've got, like,
yeah.
How dirty does it get? How aggressive does that get? Yeah. I would love to hear those conversations.
Absolutely. And just like, yeah, exactly. How I always imagine that they're very polite on the phone with each other. Like, well, what do you think? No. Okay. Well, we'll talk later. You know, it's probably very, very little actual conversation. It's probably emails back and forth. And every once in a while, some calls and a lot more yelling. I grew up in a very polite house, so that's why. but yeah, I would love to, I need to try to get Sean Marks drunk and get a little information out of him about how it goes down, the nitty gritty.
We won't tell Sean. And when you come back from those drinks, then you and I will meet up in Brooklyn and we'll,
that's right. We'll do the outdoor.
You can let me know how this all goes.
Okay.
All right. So, let me try to tie everything, together here. At one point, I actually have this in my notes. I was going to make you choose ranking Damian Lillard versus Damian Lewis. And then I thought that was too mean.
Yeah. I've always thought my two, my two, what, leading men, I guess, are Damian L's. It's crazy. I started calling Damian, Dame on set and immediately was like, oh, is that too familiar? Should I? And he was like, no, I love it. Everyone calls me Dame. I was like, okay.
I was going to say, does Damian Lewis not like being called Dame? Maybe,
yeah, maybe, I know. So. Sir Dame, we called him after a while, and we thought it was clever, and he was just like, yeah, I've heard it.
Then I thought, I'm going to make you, it's too mean to make you rank Damian Lewis versus Damian Lillard. So I'm like, well, what if I threw like five or six Damians at Kelly? And then I Googled it, and there's just not enough famous Damians.
There's the Damian from when we were young with a horror movie,
The Omen. Yes. Yes. He's freaky as all. Yeah.
He's got to be in the number one spot.
he's in the number one spot, lest you piss him off.
Yes. Cause he'll kill you.
I thought
Lillard's
about
an assassin, but this guy was literally the devil's spawn.
I thought the other route, there are various Dames like Dame Judi Dench. This whole game fell apart as I was trying to come up with it. So I'll spare you.
You have too much integrity for that.
Let's not get carried away. But let me bring this back to Billions and the Blazers, as creatively as I can. All right. So Dollar Bill is a practiced schemer. Mm-hmm. Fair to say. He has endless resources. He's cutthroat. There is nothing he would not do for the sake of Axe Capital, for his own success, whatever. I put Dollar Bill in charge of the Portland Trailblazers. Now what happens? How does Dollar Bill fix this?
Oh, you know what would happen? I'd fuck it up. Dollar Bill would fuck it up because he's too cheap. He's just too cheap. He wouldn't shell out the money. Like, he would try to play hardball with Lillard back. You know, Lillard would be gone already because his latest extension wouldn't have happened. That's the issue, I think. He would not be able to part with the money necessary.
So this is a bad idea.
It's a terrible idea.
But I thought this was a great hypothetical because Dollar Bill, like, he gets shit done, right? Like, he needs to kill some chickens. He's going to kill the chickens, you know.
But now what he would, that's true. All the chickens, even if necessary.
All of them.
With the types of players he would go after would be hard-nosed, scrappy, dirty players. He would love Bill Laimbeer, right? Mm. I mean, I don't even ask me what Kelly O'Coin thinks of Bill Laimbeer. He would want a Danny Ainge. He would want a Dennis Rodman. He would want a Bill Laimbeer. He'd want a Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, right? I was thinking Beverley.
Yeah, he would want these guys that just get under your skin and don't give a fuck and can use it against you if you do get under their skin. Like Rodman with Alonzo Mourning. You know, as soon as Rodman discovered that Mourning was a little uncomfortable with the physical closeness or his kind of gender fluid presentation of identity. Yes. He was like, "Oh, I can make you uncomfortable. Awesome!" And I was not a huge Rodman fan until I learned that, because I was like, "That is some next level mind game stuff you're doing there." And you know, you're pointing out, maybe Alonzo needs to work on himself.
So dollar bills.
I'm getting into weird territory here, but you know, like strange.
No question.
Like he would get into what other are these scrappy players?
Marcus Smart.
He'd love a Buck Williams. You know, those types of guys. Trevor Ariza in the heyday. If we're going for role players.
All right, so bad idea to put Dollar Bill in charge of the Blazers. He would get them a bunch of really scrappy players who would rack up a lot of technicals and flagrants, probably ejections.
Oh, Rasheed Wallace, thank you. Yes, good point. You mentioned technicals. Yes.
Bring Rasheed back. So then I thought, well, maybe GM is not the job for Dollar Bill. Like, I think maybe he'd be an agent, actually. Like, Dollar Bill would be a great player agent. He would be like David Falk, right? Yeah, he would be a killer in the room.
He'd be a killer. He would be. He knows how to get shit done between the margins. He knows how to get things done that aren't quite ethical or legal, or at all ethical or legal, and not get caught. So he could. He would build a hell of a roster. Yeah, and he would get a shit ton for his players. Definitely.
No question. Yeah, yeah. That part.
That's the job. Pretty,
yeah,
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Maybe that's what Mafia and I should segue into.
I was going to say, you guys aren't on a good path right now. So when this whole independent thing collapses and burns, maybe that's the play.
Sounds good to me.
Well, Billions has been renewed for a seventh season. And so, you know, they either go back, they end up being part of Prince, what's he calling his, the Prince, it's not Prince Capital. It's, but they either
Prince
go back
Management, I think.
Something. Yeah.
I don't listen to him. I don't listen to that asshole.
nor should you. I don't trust that guy. I'm not sure I want the Olympics on the west side of New York either.
Right? Didn't he learn anything? Wasn't it Giuliani who wanted it? No, it was Bloomberg. No,
it was Bloomberg,
Giuliani.
I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think Jim Dolan was part of torpedoing it, wasn't it?
I think that might be right. Yeah, I think that might be right. Interesting.
See, there's always an NBA thing somewhere in there. Can we go back a little bit here? Actually, season five was two mini seasons because of the pandemic. Yes. And, so there's this, it's just a long wait in between seasons. It's a long wait for you guys before you're able to film again. How did that impact you guys? For the cast, what was that like?
It was crazy. I mean, it was almost a year to the date, that we, from when we left to when we wrapped to when we shot our first scene again. It was so many things about it. Just on a mundane level, both Paul and I lost like 30 pounds. And so there are scenes in, I don't think for him, because I think he'd shot all his stuff for the episode or he hadn't shot any of it. So he shot all of it on one side or other of the pandemic. I had two scenes in that episode that were shot a year apart. And I was last up on the final day, March 12th, right after the NBA closed down. I was the last scene shot. And you see that scene where I'm handing him the magazine, talking about reading it on the crapper. And I'm like 205 pounds. I got heavier as the pandemic wore off, but and it's like heavier than I'd ever really been. And then the next time you see me in the episode was it was a scene shot a year and 2 months later where I'm 175 pounds. And it's like that the scenes are only about a week apart. Fascinating. But you know, there's nothing you could do, and you just trust that the audience will just be happy enough that we're back, that they won't care. I felt rusty. I think the first hour was just trying not to shout. It was like, oh no, this is, we don't have a, this isn't stage. This isn't theater. This is actually right. This is TV. I remember how to act on TV. And it was just sort of grounding yourself again. It took a little while for me. But all of that was countered by just the sheer exuberant joy. Everyone was so happy to be back. Everyone was so happy to see everyone. And that was early enough on that we weren't, you know, between takes, we had to put the masks up, and it's still pretty much the case, but a little bit less so now. But everyone was just thrilled. And so, and there was something maybe being away from it for so long and dealing with the safety protocols, there was an efficiency that was pretty extraordinary too. I really thought that we were going to have insanely long days just because of the protocols that they would get in the way, but they actually sort of helped hone us. The thing that happened was that there were some storylines that were shot and written that never played out, that never got filmed or had to get cut. Season seven, episode seven, was initially going to be a sort of a mid-season semi-finale. I mean, if you watch a show with 12 episodes, usually you'll have, you can do some weird stuff or some off-brand, not off-brand, but a little out of the ordinary stuff in the middle. And then you launch into the home stretch again and you do the very billionsy stuff, you know, or that's, you know, a gross way to put it, but or a general way of putting it. So we had some really interesting things happening in episode seven that we shot. If you had seen it and even read it, you would have been like, oh my fucking God, what? And it had to do with Bill and Spiros and a couple others, but there was mainly the thing between Dollar Bill and Spiros. And it was just too weird. I got a call from the guys, and it was like, we can't leave everyone with this because we don't know when we're coming back. And we got to hone this episode so that it keeps things on message. I'm not remembering exactly what they said, but keeps it more on message, and that really allows us to drive it home once we're back because we are coming back. We just don't know when. And so it was sad for me and for Steve Kunkin, who plays Spiros, and for David Costable Wags, who directed that episode. We had such a fun time creating the language that we were using and creating the moments and what this weird fucked up stuff they were doing was going to be like, that it was really, it was very sad that we couldn't see that. It exists somewhere on the cutting room floor. I hope one day that I can convince them to show it to me. So that affected, there was a lot of Dollar Bill stuff that got cut out of necessity. So that affected me for obvious reasons. But I do think they did a good job of maintaining the energy as best they could over that year and picking right back up where they left off. And I'm always impressed with what they do. It's never what I think. I think I said this to you before. I always think I'm ahead of them, and I'm like, oh, I know where you're going. And I'm always wrong. So.
Same. Yeah. Happily so, because that's part of the fun, is not quite being able to anticipate it. And even when you think, I understand the way this show works, and I think I've got a sense of how they build these plots out, and even the twists. So now we're anticipating the twists. We've been conditioned as fans of the show to look for it and to try to think three steps ahead too, but you know, Koppelman and Levine are thinking more steps ahead or different steps than we can possibly figure out. So,
yeah.
But I find myself doing that with the show a lot. So it's got to be really, obviously very tough for you and for the other actors to see that, not just the hard work, but the enjoyment of it. What you obviously, you're very enthused about. This was a phenomenal scene or episode. Just go away. The story just goes away. And I'm sure for Koppelman and Levine and whoever else worked on that script, it's got to be, I would think, similarly painful, which leads me to think, like, is there some chance? Do you have any sense of like, is it without telling us what it is? Cause I'm sure you cannot, but is it something that's plausible enough that they could weave it back in somewhere in episodes to come?
I don't know. They talked about, so they had a podcast, sort of an after show podcast.
Yes. Which I listened to. That was fun.
Yeah. And that was really fun. And they had David Costable on as they were talking about that episode seven. And they brought up the fact that that there was a really cool thing that they had to cut and the reasons why. And they were like, you know, it was nice. I heard it. I was listening to it. It was depressing early days of the pandemic. And I was, but they said, you know, Kelly and Steve acted the hell out of it and you directed the hell out of it. And we loved the writing. We wrote it ourselves. We loved it. But it had to go. And then they listed some of the reasons why, that I've just talked about. I know the fact that they brought that up, I think you're right, indicates that they were really, really bummed. I don't know how their brains work in the writer's room that way. I don't know. They're great at changing things up and moving forward. I don't know how that aspect of how they put this show together, that sort of energy, I don't know how that translates to what they might do with that storyline. It just might not be something that can work, but maybe I'm wrong. It's a great, weird, just fucked up little thing. And that it would be nice to have that exist in the Billions universe.
I don't know if anybody's still making or watching DVDs, but that's the kind of thing you could put on the, like, the extras on a DVD, right?
I know. And they've never done a special features thing. I love the bloopers reels and, you know, cut scenes or that kind of thing, or interviews with them. They're such interesting and smart and funny people that I would love to have, like in movies when you have you can watch the movie with the commentary over it.
Yeah.
I watched Sideways a second time when I had the DVD, and Thomas Hayden Church and Paul Giamatti were talking and laughing and joking over the movie. And it was actually, I love that movie, but it was even more enjoyable. After Paul and I became friends, I actually told him that. I've watched that with him talking over it more times than I've seen the movie itself.
I think that movie came out the same year we moved California to New York, and we love the wine country. And, you know, I'm from the Bay Area. My wife's from Southern California, and we've spent a lot of time in the wine country. I think that was one of those movies we saw it out here after we'd moved. And it was one of those, oh man, that's just painful. Like, we hadn't completely adapted to New York yet and still kind of pining for California, or just feeling that displacement.
Yeah.
You've moved 3,000 miles as well. Like, it's very, very different. And I love New York. I love living here, but it's that the early year or two, that was, there were those little pangs sometimes. Yeah. And I think Sideways was actually part of that, but wonderful.
Do you ever think we have made a huge mistake momentarily?
Well, you know what happens, Kelly? Like, this is different for you because you came from cold and rainy Portland. Sorry.
Right. Right.
My last stop in California was, you know, 9 years in Southern California and 7 years of living in Hermosa Beach. So I have friends back there who will just, you know, text me, you know, screenshot, you know, text me shots of, like, you know, here's the sunset over the ocean. Here's the weather forecast for the next, you know, 7 days. They just do taunting stuff because my friends are mean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Carolyn. My wife is from the Pasadena area, Arcadia, Monrovia border. And she's got friends who like to pull my friends now too, who like to point out that, oh, hail, you got sleet. We're out back having margaritas, you know, well, lovely people.
I can walk to the restaurant all the time and I don't have to sit in traffic. So there,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or something.
Wildfires. I guess I shouldn't joke about that.
Wildfires, earthquakes. I lived through it all.
You lived through it all. Yeah.
When did the cast know that Damian Lewis Bobby Axelrod was leaving, because for those of us who were just fans of the show, I don't remember seeing any hints of this. And so it was like, which is good for as a viewer to have this kind of the shock of, oh, holy shit, he's now in what, Switzerland?
Yeah.
To have that moment, you want that to, you want that to hit you hard. What did you guys know that this is where things were heading?
We knew in the off season, immediately preceding season five, and Damien actually threw a party for the cast at the place he was staying in Brooklyn, and we all got to have a nice evening together before we launched into the final campaign. It was important that we all knew, of course, but I was shocked that I didn't see a single leak. I didn't hear a peep, like you say. I don't think it was leaked anywhere. The only leak would have happened, I think the episode, maybe not. A lot of the episodes. Oh no! So the episodes are available. Last season were available at midnight.
Yes,
the night before. So there were the more that on Sunday there was a lot of chatter, and anyone who was paying too much attention on Twitter would be like, "Wait, what? Wait, he's gone!" But that was vast minority that caught that. But the fact that everyone on the set knew, everybody, all the actors, all the crew, all the producers, all the publicists, all everybody knew, and they somehow kept it secret. I'm pretty impressed, actually.
No doubt.
Were you able to put it together? What was happening when he did it? Take the press release afterwards for you to realize he was actually gone, or when you saw him walk off and smile, were you like, "Wait, fuck, is he gone?"
Yeah, no, that's how I felt. That's how I felt. And of course, the episode was great because there was the whole, the empty helicopter thing and this whole misdirection play, which they're so great at.
Yeah.
And he gets off the plane, and I'm thinking, like, is Chuck going to be there to arrest him on the tarmac in Switzerland? I was still expecting some other hammer to drop, right?
Well, like, how did Wags get there with the Michter's celebration bourbon before him? Wait a minute.
Nice Michter's plug.
Thank you. Yeah.
It did. I mean, in real time. And then I think, fade to black or whatever credits. And my wife and I are saying, "Well, is he really gone?" Because this is the kind of show where this could just be the suspenseful, cliffhanger type that he'll find his way back. Because
That was our who shot JR type of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
To date you and I really badly. Yes.
It's what I've heard about. I've read the kids are talking about it still.
somebody wrote a recap. They did a binge watch.
That's right.
Do you think he's gone for good? I mean, as a character, as an actor, I know Damian Lewis obviously made this decision. So
right. So to be clear, I never know anything about this type of stuff. I don't even know the scripts or even the storylines before I get the scripts for that week. That's how in the dark we are kept. I mean, I'm sure that Damien and Maggie and Paul, I'm sure there's some general outlines that they're made aware of, but I'm not privy to any of that stuff. So this is just me talking. I think he's essentially gone for good. I do think it's open, and he's even said publicly, it's like, if things work out and it makes sense, I suppose there'd be a cameo or two or maybe a tiny arc or something like that. I don't know the terminology he used. So I could see something like that happening if that's what Brian and David end up wanting to do. I don't know this, but I don't think that there are any grand plans for something like that to happen.
Yeah.
Damien signed for 5 seasons and he did not, it was his choice not to re-up. His home is England. And it's a long time to be away from your family and kids, and his wife just passed. So,
very sad. And I remember when I saw that news, a year or so, whenever that was.
Yeah.
And I thought that if I was putting things together, I thought maybe that was going to be the cause of him leaving the show, but apparently that was a decision he had predetermined. So,
yeah. And I'm not sure what the,
there's some part of me, just as a Billions fan, that is still bummed that we never got my long hoped for flashback episode of showing the beginnings of the bromance between Dollar Bill and Axe. Like, I always wanted to know, like, what is this fierce loyalty? When did this start? I really, really wanted 10 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe an entire episode of like young Axe and young Dollar Bill scheming somewhere in like Omaha. I don't know. There's an origin story there that never got told that I really wanted.
I think that, yeah, because it's an interesting relationship that they have, and it is not at the level of closeness, obviously, as him and as Bobby and Wags, but there's something there, and there are hints of it, like in when they're at the batting cages, and he comes and I give him some information, and there's that stuff about give him that Ayn Rand bullshit about you know, you could be an outlaw and you should be an outlaw again. And the, you know, in the fake fight, it's like, I love you like a brother. Like just little hints that it's more.
Yeah.
But he's still not, he doesn't have his own office. I don't think Bill really wants that anyway, but he's not drinking with them late at night. They don't have any scenes like that. So it's not the same type of brotherhood that he has with Wags. And so that makes me even more curious about what that means. Did he save me somehow, you know? I'm committed to him, because he saved my life. I owe my life to him. Something like that. I'd be really curious.
That's the kind of stuff I wondered about. And it's definitely clear that outside of Wags, there was nobody that he had a stronger or more important connection to on his own staff, his own company, than Dollar Bill, and that was a constant. And you know, yeah. So you wonder. I guess we will never find out. Maybe that'll be in the extras on the DVD as well. Compliment Levine can tell us a whole backstory that they never actually got around to.
Maybe Damien and I will get drunk and do a Zoom, and we'll just riff.
I love that idea. Hey, listen, if they could, like, wasn't it Princess Bride where they did, like, during the pandemic, they did the
reading.
They did the read. I think that's right. Am I remembering or just imagining that?
I think they did, and there were a couple of shows that did that.
Yeah,
which was really fun.
So there you go.
That's our version of it. We're improvising backstories.
You guys just freelance it. All right, last thing. Favorite most enjoyable scene, not including the one that we'll never get to see because it ended up on the cutting room floor. I'm thinking the fake fight with Axe, boxing Mephi, even though it did cost you a broken rib.
Right.
Singing Springsteen in the Chicken Man episode. I was going to say ramming Spiros' Ferrari, but that was probably a stunt driver. I'm guessing you didn't get to crash the car. Oh, you got to crash the... Was that a real Ferrari driver, you smashed too?
I smashed a real... No, a Porsche.
A Porsche.
I would never smash a Ferrari, please. No. So the initial impact, the initial car driving in, boom, the initial drive, whatever, I can't come up with a word, but yeah, the initial thing was the stunt driver, and that was from like 60 feet away, 100 feet away, whatever it was, and then each subsequent time was me, and they taught me how to start real fast and go in, and as soon as I start to feel the impact, also hit the brake. Not only will it mean I won't drive the car into the camera crew behind the car, it'll also look great because there's more of a jolt. First time I did it, and they kept one of the takes, I forgot to do that, and the car slides about a car length. And they were far enough away, no one was actually in danger, but you can see one of the takes, they keep that when the car travels a little more than it should. Anyway, that day was one of the most viscerally thrilling days I've ever had in my life. And Kunkin and I, who had already become friends because of the show, or on the show, bonded. We're bonded for life now because of that crazy juvenile violent act. But we were so hyped. We were like 12-year-old boys. We were like, this is really fun. You know, like you can't quite catch your breath when you're trying to talk. That, anything I got to do with Sarah Stiles as Bonnie, like it's the version of the first scene where she challenges me in the liar's poker is much shorter than it was than what we shot. And it was so much fun to play with her. It was her first week on the show. And I was kind of like, oh, she's going to be great. And I was convinced Dollar Bill and she were going to get together. And then because I never predict properly, I was like, well, that's why they're never going to get together. And then they did. And so they tricked me even then. Brian and David tricked me even then. And then a lot of the Chicken Man episode was great. Singing Springsteen was a thrill. Cause I grew up, he was one of my heroes. But the fake fight still has to be my favorite scene. But it's nice to have had a nice group of other ones to talk about too.
Absolutely. And someday we'll maybe get to see the lost scenes on the DVD that I'm now creating on behalf of Koppelman and Levine.
Well, maybe once the show runs its course after the series finale, I'm sure we could talk about what that scene was at least, because your mind will be blown.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. If nothing else, over whiskey one of these days.
Absolutely.
In Brooklyn. Before I let you go, anything else you're working on people should be on the lookout for?
There are three things coming out in the next month that I was able to shoot last year as well while doing Billions. One is The End Game, which was directed by Fast and the Furious franchise leader, Justin Lin. I'm in the pilot of that, and that's actually on Monday that premieres on NBC.
Okay.
On Apple TV on February 18th, We Crashed airs. That is the story of the guy who created WeWork, and I'm playing real life financial blogger Scott Galloway, and that was a blast. And then the big thing I did last year, which will air on Hulu at the end of March, is called The Girl from Plainville. It's on Hulu. I play a very different role. I play a police officer, a detective. And it's great. Chloe Sevigny, Elle Fanning, a great, great group of people. The woman who wrote The Post, if you remember that movie,
is
one of the showrunners. Yeah, Liz Hannah.
Nice.
And Peter McManus. So yeah, a bunch of things coming up. I'm really excited about. Yeah.
I look forward to watching all of those. You're going to cost me a lot of money in subscriptions because everything you're doing is on a different platform, Kelly.
But you're welcome.
Happily, I think I've actually subscribed to most of those by now. But you know, by the time this stupid pandemic is over, we all will have subscribed to absolutely everything because
I get the screeners from, because I'm a Screen Actors Guild voter, obviously, I get the screeners, and it's like a whole box of DVDs from Netflix. And I'm like, I fucking have Netflix. Like, this doesn't help me at all.
Plus, in a small Brooklyn apartment, as I can relate, like, there's nowhere to put all this stuff.
No, we finally had to get rid of a bunch of them. And there's this... we should have, but I mean, I'm pretty cavalier about it. I'm just like, throw them away or give them away or give them somebody, but you're not supposed to. And it says like, you could be prosecuted if this shows up at anyone else's place because it's free. And you know, it's like pirated. Essentially, if I give it to you, I am pirating that material. And so Carolyn will go through and slice, like cut into them with scissors before we throw them away. And she's right.
Wow.
She's right. She's a better person than I am.
Better with the scissors, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's actually kind of sad to think about that. All this wonderful art being destroyed before I got a chance to swipe it off of your stoop. Kelly, this has been a blast. Great catching up with you. I hope the Blazers discussion was therapeutic on some level for you.
Yeah.
Good luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And of course, good luck to Dollar Bill and Mafee the rest of the way. I think they need it more than the Blazers at this
point. I think right now they need an influx of luck, an infusion. Thanks, brother.
Thank you. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Kelly Alcoin for joining me. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Go subscribe to the Sports Illustrated podcast channel on YouTube. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, @HowardBeck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.